Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is a very special episode 202, Cube of Death Kickstarter with Peter Bryant. So I want to welcome all of you new and longtime listeners alike, because you're in for a treat. Now, if you're not familiar with how we do things here, we talk about a lot of things, so many that I don't expect you to remember because you're painting figures, you're working out of the gym, you're driving to work. Don't worry, we got you covered with show notes. That's right. Go to wargamingrecon.com/WR202. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR202. And those show notes have links. They have things that we talk about. So you'll be able to get at all the really cool stuff that we cover in the show when you have time to actually sit at a computer, because no one sits at a computer nowadays, but you can sit at a computer, go on your smartphone, and you'll be able to get access to all of those. And today we're talking about an upcoming Kickstarter. In our last episode, we talked about previous Kickstarters, we updated them, and we mentioned one of them that has me really excited that's coming out in 2018. And it is the Cube of Death game. It's designed by Mr. Peter Bryant, who is a game designer. He successfully Kickstarted Rogue Chess, and we talked about that on episode 93 of Wargaming Recon. He's also a host and podcaster of The Mythwits. So I would like to welcome our guest, Mr. Peter Bryant. How are you today?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for having me on, Jonathan.
It is always a pleasure to have you. And I was really excited when you had told me before that Cube of Death was coming, and it's coming sooner than I thought it would be coming.
Yeah, it's been a long time. We both go to TotalCon. I'm going to see you there next week as of this recording. Yep. Like almost literally 1 week, which is awesome. And that's where this started. I was back then doing a show at the con called Blixapalooza. My nickname is in gaming and stuff. A pen name that I like to use was Blix. And I would host this, like, it was like a 2 hour event, 2-3 hour event, where I would do all kinds of different stuff with people at the con. And one of the things I did at the con about, I want to say 5 years ago, was I was doing a trivia game. And I literally had 4 sheets of paper that just had questions on them. And each sheet was a category. And I got the usual, you know, the usual rogues gallery. I think that time it was Mike Cavis and James Carpio and Jay Libby and John Sussenberger, maybe. And the game was run a whole way different than it is now. But it was literally just trivia questions, and they got points for them. And if you got it right, you got a point. If you got it wrong, you didn't. And they could pick from categories. And then it evolved and evolved and evolved and evolved and evolved to where it is today. And today it is a full-on card game that is completely independent of any kind of sheets of paper, whatever. It's all run by cards.
That's a really cool mechanic. Yeah. I remember when you, I don't think it was the first incarnation, but one of the early ones where it was a combination of just the trivia, but you actually included dealing damage to people using, was it a D6 or a D20, I think?
D6, that's the cube. D6. The cube of death is the D6 that you roll, because that's what kills you.
It was a lot of fun. I would make a point to go at TotalCon and sit in the audience and watch. And just like seeing what people knew and what they didn't know was really amazing. And there was a question once, there was a Star Wars question. I think I ended up answering, I was in the audience or something. It was about bounty hunters. And I was like, this is a really cool game because it's about Star Wars and all the other cool geek things that we know and love. Right. And then another year, you actually had a question, which I, at the time, it, I remember thinking like, oh, okay, they think they're setting up in like a, one, this guy's going to hit out of the park. And I'm not going to say who it is,
but
it was about something that they created for a very well-known game. And I don't blame them for getting it wrong because, I mean, it's been a while.
A million years ago,
And like everyone's like, oh, like, oh yeah, look, this is going to be great. And then the guy's like, what the bleep are you talking about?
Yeah. I'm not going to say the name. I'm not going to say the name, but you're right. It was an iconic person and an iconic geek property. And this person actually worked on that property. And it was amazing to me because they were coming from cards. The questions were coming from cards in a deck and it was random. And that person got this card. Notice I'm saying that person. I'm not even saying he or she.
No, it doesn't matter, anyway, honestly.
Right. It doesn't matter. And when that person got the question, I was excited because I was just like, oh, man, I put this question in. This is perfect. I can't wait. And they had no clue. And they got mad at me.
They got mad at me.
Yelled at me after the game. You made me look like an idiot. Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, whoa. No, I did. Oh my God, that was not the intent at all. Mm-mm. But I understand. Look, to be fair, I do understand that person's position on it because it was a property that they had worked on, and because the question was, you know, directly spoke to them, and because they didn't know the answer. And trivia is a pain in the butt. Let me tell you, I get it. I mean, like, the only reason I know the answers is because I researched them. I understand when people don't get these. Like, matter of fact, I always encourage people when they're like doing bad, they're like, oh, I'm so dumb. Like, no, you're not dumb. Trivia is actually deceptively hard. People think they know trivia until they're confronted with it. It is really hard. So anyway, I understand why this person got upset, and I truly felt bad because I was very excited. I thought it would be a cool thing and they didn't like it. And it kind of hurt my feelings a little bit. Like I was actually personally kind of hurt by the whole thing. I mean, it's funny now, right? I mean, it's funny. We all joke about it, but you know, at the time I was so disappointed. I was like, oh man, this was supposed to be really cool. And it wasn't cool. And anyway. So yeah, that was, yeah, I remember that. It was like 3 years ago, I think.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do understand why they didn't answer the question. Like, you're there, and then, like, you see everyone getting excited. They get like, oh, you're really going to – and then the pressure's on. It's that whole game show thing, right? You sit at home, and you're watching Jeopardy or whatever the heck the game show is, and you're like, well, I know the answer. Why doesn't that moron know it? Because you're sitting in your chair at home, and you're not up there in front of the audience knowing everyone's going to be watching you. That's why.
And you're not held to task every time you get one wrong at home. You're like, oh, yeah, okay, yeah, that was that. But see – When you're in your chair at home watching TV, that's all it is. Like, oh yeah, that's what that was. But when you're on the screen, that's everybody looking at you, and that's you getting it wrong. And you forget about those, and you only remember it's called forgetting the misses and remembering the hits. You only remember the ones you got right, and you forget about all the ones that you personally got wrong or were off by. Because like you might have it kind of right, but if it's not right, it's not right. You know, it's not fully right, it's not right. So yeah, I that is the beauty of this game, and it's. You know, it was interesting because, you know, trivia seems to have gotten a real big foothold in conventions lately. And it's weird because I think I was coming, you know, I go to conventions all the time. So I think that I was coming into this at the same time as everyone else. You know, it's like, you know, when you think you had this great idea and then you look back and you see that, well, a lot of people had the same idea at the same time. It's like, no, it's just one of those things that it's kind of organic. It's like it kind of happened when it happened and it kind of happened all at once in multiple places, you know. Charles Darwin came up with evolution, right? But he wasn't the only one that was working on it at the time. You know, there was multiple people like in different aspects, and one in particular. But it's like a great idea. It's that old adage, was it? Nobody invents anything. We all just discover what was already there. You know what I mean? So trivia has been a big thing at conventions lately, which is really good for me. Works out really good for me because it shows me that people really love it. So it was kind of it was kind of interesting the way that came about. So I'm very happy that this is coming out now while trivia is really hot.
But Cupid Death isn't just a trivia game, right? Because if it was, you would have just done the paper method before or been like, here's some cards or whatever. You have an added dimension to it, which I think – kind of ties into what I had mentioned before about how you used to use a D6. There's right. something that makes it a little extra special, right? That helps it to stand out.
Yeah, that's so going to so I primarily go to gaming conventions. So like I go to Dragon Con as well, not every year. Like I'm not going this year, but I love going to Dragon Con, which is sort of a media con. It has gaming, but it's really the gaming there is really light. But being that I go to gaming conventions a lot and I do a lot of game design stuff, I wanted to make it like a role playing type game. I wanted to say, I was like, man, I could do something with this, because like just a trivia game is not. To me is not that interesting, because there's a million of them. I mean, a lot of people that have trivia games, like what would me making another trivia game be anything? Like I guarantee if you got on your computer right now and you Googled geek trivia games, you would find 100 of them. Right. But I was like, how can I turn this into a role play? How can I do role playing elements with this? And they kind of came like one piece at a time. But like I said, I've been doing this for 5 years. So every year, you know, I get to add new elements. Matter of fact, this last go around just, I went to Metatopia, which was in November, and I've added 2 more gaming elements to it that were never in it before because of that convention. Because one of these, we did this high test, which is other game designers come and play your game, like people who have published games come and play your game, and then they give you feedback on it and they suggest things. And 2 of the things they suggested, one of them was, and we'll get into this, but one of them was like, what about gold? Like, can we get gold? And I was like, well, it doesn't really fit, but maybe I could work it in. And I have. And another one was like, what about secret doors? And I was like, that's going to be very difficult, but I have put it in. So it's in, but it's not its own mechanic. It's just, but it's in there. So when you're playing the game, you will encounter a secret door. It doesn't really change the game a whole lot, but it's an element that does exist, which is a dungeon, you know, like, a dungeon has to have secret doors, right? I mean, so I managed to put those in as well. So there's all kinds of stuff. You play characters, you have magic. There are magic items. There are hit points. You get to make decisions when you go into rooms. So if you, and there are rooms, but we can go through that when we go through the cards, you know, when we get through this, like when we describe the actual mechanics of the game, there are adventure cards and there are treasures and stuff. So we'll go through that.
So, your background, actually, your game design background, that's predominantly role-playing games as opposed to other types of games, right?
That, yeah, you know, it's interesting. So yeah, I've been playing role-playing games since the 80s, since 1980, in fact.
Before I was born. just to make you feel old.
Yeah, right. I just turned 48. So most of my gaming experiences in role-playing games, and I've played everything, you know, mecha games, board games, all that stuff. I'm a gamer. And I've done a lot of role-playing development. As a matter of fact, my first industry gig was doing artwork for RPGs. A lot of people don't know that about me. But my first two gigs in professional RPG stuff was artwork. And then I did some writing and some design. And then a little bit of everything with some things, you know, like with Jay Libby, I've helped him with some stuff. One of his very first books before he really knew Photoshop that well, I did the cover for one of his books. So I did the whole layout for it and everything. And then I did some writing for the interior of his book. He had, he wanted a base. So I did a map. So I've done mapping too, like professional level. And this dude, I want to go back to, you're seeing all these really cool maps online today, you know, like these cool, like graphic maps and stuff. I did a graphic map for Jay back in 2003, that was done in Photoshop with all kinds of imagery and texture and stuff like that. And almost nobody was doing those back then. I should have done more of that back then. I could have been cutting edge, but at any rate, so I've done all that, and I've done writing for games, and I've done design work, and I did some stuff for Tri-Tac system. But when it comes to publishing games, the only thing I've done is card games. So I had Rogue Chess, and I have Cube of Death now, and they're both card games. I mean, Rogue Chess is sort of a board game, card game hybrid, but the section I did for it was adding cards to the board game. So I'm going to call that me doing a card game, right? It was a card game you play with the board game. And this is just it's a card game. It has role-playing elements in it, but you know, if I had to put my nickel down on whether it was a card game or a role-playing game. It's a card game that has role-playing game elements. I do have a role-playing game, though, and we'll be getting into that.
Mythic Steel?
Yeah, Mythic Steel. Yeah, but we're not going to go down that road. That's a long discussion. We'll do that next. We'll do that some other time.
Okay.
But yeah.
I can check that off my list, then.
Yeah. I don't really want to talk about that right now because
no, I don't blame you. We're here to talk about Keeper Death, but
it's in development. This is
I wrote it and then I crossed it out and I wrote it and I crossed it out and I said, oh, why the heck wouldn't I write it down just in case we had time to just mention the name.
It's a very cool new take on the fantasy genre that when you see it, when you all see it, if you ever decide to play it, you're going to see something new, right? And I guarantee you, you're going to be like, wow, that is, I've never seen that before. And it's significant. It's not just some tiny little new thing. It's a significant new thing, maybe two. So anyway, we'll leave it at that. So just kind of keep an eye out for it.
Okay. One of the things that excited me about Cube of Death from your early days and seeing more progression, and you've been kind enough in the past to send me some prototypes at different stages so I could kind of look at them and everything. I'm not really what anyone would call an RPer. I'm not someone who really plays role-playing games. I've done some, but I am as noob as you get with them. And I have, you know, an interest in them, but not enough that I'm actually going to go and invest myself in a role-playing game system, whether it's D&D or anything really. I'm not going to do it. But Cube of Death seems like that entry-level aspect so that it gets someone who maybe isn't your stereotypical role player and then introduces them to some of those features and really allows them to get a taste for it to then see, like, do they want to try other role-playing games? Do they want to stick with this? That whole card mechanic I love because also I think there's a lot of people who don't have a whole lot of time to play games, right? But they want to play. We're also busy. There are a lot of us who are parents, a lot of us who work two jobs or whatever. We don't have the time to go to the game store or to have people over at our house. But when you start doing things like card games or smaller games, you're able to just keep them in your car. You're able to keep them in your backpack, your work bag or whatever. And then you can just pull them out and at a drop of a hat, literally, and then play with whoever is there who might be of interest. And so I think you have this really cool mechanic here that you're able to use by using the cards and blending in these other features that broadens the appeal to people who would be non-traditional users of a certain system and setting.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about that. So I'm going to bust out the cards now because okay. we're sort of at that stage because you're talking about the RPG elements and you kind of have to understand what we're talking about for me to talk about it. So I'm for you audio listeners, I'm holding up the cards now. So this is my prototype deck of questions. And this is just the basic and advanced. So this would be just the basic and advanced. And this is the prototype. So there's going to be a lot more of these. And I'll go through the numbers in a little bit of how many. Right now, that's not important. But you have basic questions. Right. So the basic questions are in green and this back is changing. So this is the original prototype and you'll be seeing the new prototype, the next version of it in a few minutes.
Well, yeah. So the artwork's not finalized, but the core mechanics and the way things work are pretty set.
Yes, absolutely. So this is a basic question. It's green. So the basic is green. And this is the other side of it. And you'll see it says basic on it and has a one up here. And that will be important for one type of play because there's multiple types of play. But I'm not going to get into those other ones right this second. We'll come back to that. We're talking about the RPG version of this. And you'll see that there are two categories on here. And this card in particular has Discworld and Physics. So if you were to be asked a basic question, anytime you're asked a basic question, you have the reader of the card will have to give you two options and you pick the one you want. So that's the first thing that makes this card easier because I give you a category. I give you a choice of categories. So Jonathan, if I were to ask you Discworld or Physics, if you're not a Discworld fan, right? You went to high school, so you might know the physics.
Yeah, right. I'd have to be like, some physics. Science.
Yeah. Physics, you'd pick physics, right? And then I would ask you this physics question. And even on the basic cards, not only is the first part of what makes it easier is the fact that you get to pick the category. The second part is that these questions are a little easier. So they're a little easier than the more advanced questions, the more advanced cards. So that's important because that will come into play big time during the adventure part of the game. So that's that. And there's all kinds of categories, you know, but they're always geek related. So there's Discworld physics, Indiana Jones, Dune, Matrix, D&D, comic books, biology. Now that may change for the final go around when I go to Kickstarter. One of the things I have to do is I have to talk to TSR's lawyer to make sure. Now I think I'm cool. I think I'm okay because this isn't a Star Wars desk or a Discworld. I'm sorry, Star Wars deck or a Discworld deck. There's no Star Wars art or Discworld art or any of that kind of stuff. There's no properties that I'm, and these questions are my own questions written in my own words. I'm not copying somebody else's questions. So I don't think I'll have any copyright issues, but I want to get a lawyer's take on that first. If that's the case, then what would just happen here is instead of Discworld, it would say maybe fantasy, and physics is fine. Of course, it's not copyrighted. But like for the Indiana Jones, it might be pulp era. For Dune, it might be sci-fi. So I may have to go back to that. I was trying to make it even easier by naming, you know, instead of just saying sci-fi, because that's a big broad category. If I say Dune, you're like, oh, I know sci-fi, but I don't know Dune, you know, and you might want to go with Indiana Jones. So anyway, we'll see about that. We'll see where that winds up. But as of right now, I think I'm safe with the property names. But we'll see. And then there's the advanced questions, and that's the blue card. And you'll see this has the new logo. That's the logo I'm going with. That's the one I chose. I put a survey out. I had answers all over the board.
Of course you did.
But it really boiled down to either the skull with just, you know, it either boiled down to this version or this version with pips. So like pips on it, slick dice pips, or the lines. So I'm kind of splitting it down the middle and saying, all right, well, this has the lines. It doesn't have the pips because some people hated the pips and some people didn't like just the basic design. So this is a healthy in the middle version that everybody seems to like. And you could tell it's a cube with those lines in there. They make it anyway. So this has 2 points. This is worth 2 points. This is an advanced card. And this has one question on it. And you have to take that category. So this one would be Star Wars. And I would just read you this question. That's it. You get no choices on it. The questions are a little harder. But on every one of these advanced cards for the role-playing version of the game, when you're using everything, has a magic item on it. So right below this is a magic item. And if you get this question right, if you're asked this in the role-playing version and you get this question right, I give you this card. And you keep it in front of you. And when you want to, when the time comes, you can cash it in. You can give it back to me and you can say, I'm going to use this special ability right now. It's a one-time use. So like, for example, this one would be like if you're attacking another player, because you can go player versus player, you would say suffer no more than 3 points of damage play after the roll. So if the other character, if the other player, let's say you and I are playing against each other, let's say you did 6 points of damage to me.
Mm-hmm.
I could then play this card and go, oh no, only 3.
Ooh, nice. So
you could knock off 3 points. You maximize it at 3 and you would cash it into the game master. So, and there's all kinds of effects on these. I mean, there's all kinds of magic items. That was an Adamite helmet. There's boots of speed. And then here's one of the new elements I've added. This one is gold. Okay. So if you get this one right, I give it to you. And you on this card, you get 60 gold pieces. Now, what this does, because when you're playing the game, you go through the dungeon and you can run into other players and fight them and stuff. But when you're done the number of dungeon cards, which is 9, so you go through 9 rounds of dungeon. And then once you get to the 10th round, the survivors, because people can die during the dungeon round, anyone surviving to that round will then just fight each other. So it's just round robin of you fighting each other with questions. But prior to that, once you're done with the dungeon and you go into that sudden, you know, sudden death playoff, you can then take all your gold and cash it in. And for every 10 gold that you have, you get 1 hit point back. So this is worth 6 hit points, basically. But you got to make it to the end to cash it in. So that's how I added gold. So I thought, because I was like, how am I going to use gold? Like, what am I going to do with gold in a game where we're playing cards, right? And that's how that works. All right, so those are the two. Those are 2 of the levels of questions. Now, the reason why this is in a separate box, so this is a separate deck. This is called the adventure deck. Those are the questions. This is the adventure deck. In the adventure deck, you have your heroes, you have your expert cards, and you have your You have your adventure cards. Oh, hold on. I did that wrong. You know what? I'm sorry. I was setting this up before the game. All right. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Let me take that back. So the advanced cards, sorry. The only difference is that the advanced cards go with the adventure, not the expert cards, but that's fine. Doesn't matter. So, oh, Jesus. Up here. All right. So the advanced cards would go with the adventure deck. My bad. But let's do the expert cards. Let's talk about the expert cards. So the expert cards are player versus player. So anytime you go up against another player, that's when the expert card comes into play. So if you and I are fighting each other, I'm going to use one of these. And what this is, the way this works is there's one category. So in this case, it's Star Trek. You would get asked a question. If you get the question right, you damage the other player for 1d6. Right. If you get it wrong, you take 1d6 because you're fighting each other. You're like dueling each other. So let's say you got it right. There's a part two, and the part two plays on the part one. So it's an extension of the part one question. So it's another question based upon the answer from the first one. If you get that one right, you get to do another d6. So you get to wind up doing 2d6 to that person. If that person, let's say you got it wrong, and then it went to that person, they get this question. So what it really boils down to is you could take 1 or 2d6, and they could take 1 or 2d6, but 2d6 is getting delivered in that round. It could be one each, or two to one person, or two to the other. So either one of you two could wind up taking 1 or 2d6, but 2d6 of damage will be delivered in that round. So it's pretty cool. It's like a duel. It's how you fight each other. And these questions, so they're not super hard. You know, they range. They're all over the place. So, and so they're fun. So now we talk about, let's talk about the heroes real quick. So we're talking about damage, and we're talking about, you know, heroes and role playing and stuff. So in role playing, you have characters, right? Your character is your card. So you have one card that is your character, and each one is a class, and there's 10 of them. So every deck comes with 10 character classes. So for the fantasy deck, or what I'm calling the mythic deck, there's wizard, warrior, rogue, berserker, ranger, assassin, druid, cleric. And each one of them has a special ability. And much like the magic item, when you want to cash in their special ability, you give that to the game master, and that's it. You can use it one time. There is a quest ability and a player versus player ability. So if we're fighting, you and I are fighting each other, there's an ability for that. If we're in the dungeon and something happens, like a trap or a creature or something like that, there's also a quest ability, which you can use, but you have to pick. Once you use it, you cash the card in. You can only use it one time. So for example, let's take the cleric. So the cleric in a player versus player, if it's a basic question, he may smite the enemy, by forcing them to take the same damage. So let's say you and I are fighting each other and I do 2d6 to you, right? You can go, oh, well, I'm going to smite you and do 2d6 back to you. So we both take 2d6. We both take the damage. So any damage delivered to you, you can say, nope, you're going to take it too. You know, so this is kind of like the clerical smite. Or as a quest ability, the hero heals 6 life points. So you could be going through the dungeon and like, man, I'm getting really low on life points. You can say, you know what? I'm going to use my cleric ability now. I want to heal 6 points of damage. And just heal 6 points of damage. And so this is important. We've been talking about damage. Everybody has 30 hit points. Everybody starts the game with, well, life points. Everybody starts the game with 30 life points. So as you go through the dungeon, every time you get a question wrong, you take a D6 of damage. So you can see where you could get wiped out early on if it's really bad and the luck goes against you. But there are magic items and stuff. There's healing potions. You know, there's characters that can heal. There's the gold that you can get that you can cash in. So I've rarely ever seen anyone die in the dungeon. It happens, but it's most people make it at least with a few points to the end. So it's pretty well balanced. And I've played the crap out of this. All right. So let's get into the adventure cards real quick, and then we can move on. So the adventure cards are, they are random cards. You'll shuffle these up and then you'll pull them out. And for example, this one is a ritual chamber. Now I've got to lighten these up. So you're seeing these on the screen. This is a prototype deck. The art came in, it was a little dark, so I got to lighten them up. But In this case, this one's called the Round Chamber. And in it, there's an encounter. It's an evil spirit. So you're on your turn, like we're playing at a table and we go around the table, you know, from whatever, from left to right or whatever. I would come to you and say, Jonathan, all right, I'm going to pull my adventure card. I pull this out and I go, oh, Ritual Chamber. Jonathan, this chamber has a freshly stained victim. An evil presence overcomes you. So what this card is, it's an encounter. It's an evil spirit. You have one option on this one. It says a will save to defeat the evil spirit. And that's a basic question. So then I would go to the basic deck and it's color coded and it says basic. So I would read you this basic question. If you get the question right, you get to go past the room. If you get it wrong, you take damage. You still get past the room, but you get past, you don't get past. It's considered that you always win unless you die, but there are some consequences. So if you get it wrong, you take damage. So let me, I should have picked one that has two options on it. So let's do this one. All right. So this one is a tea hall, right? And this one has a trap in it. So it's a spiked trap. So you turn the corner and the floor gives way to a pit full of spikes. You can either, for a basic question, you can do an agility check to leap out of the danger. So I would take one of the green cards. Right. You say, I just want the basic. I take one of the green cards and I'd read it, one of the easy cards. And if you get it right, you get past the trap. If you get it wrong, you get past trap, but you take six or D6 of damage. Or you can do a climb check to go into the pit and get the treasure from one of its victims. Right. So basically what you're doing is you're going to climb down into the, not only are you just not trying to fall into it, you're going to climb down into it. Pick through with the bodies that are in the pit and try and find an item. So then I would go to the advanced card, right? I go to one of the advanced cards and I'd read you this question. If you get it right, you get a magic item. And if you get it wrong, you take D6 damage. So it's like an adventure. You have options. You can do things. You can play it like a character would. There's damage, there's characters, there's hit points. You know, it's got all those elements. And some of this is just luck. Like Mike Kafis will tell you, he will admit that he is terrible at trivia, right? Terrible at this geek trivia. And he has actually won the game because he is bad at it. He has gotten most of the questions wrong and still won the game because the dice worked in his favor and he used his abilities and magic items properly. And he managed to win. And it was, it was funny because it was like, of all the people who were going to win, I didn't think it was going to be you. and that's no insult on him. He'll admit he'll tell you, oh yeah, yeah, yep, totally agree. So that's it. That's the game in a nutshell. For the role-playing aspects. There are some other aspects to it, which we can get into. But what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna put these back in the box just so for visual display, because some of the stuff we're gonna talk about divide the decks up and do things differently.
So what's the recommended number of players for a game like this?
I'm going to go with three. All right. So it depends on the version you're playing. If you're playing the Blitz version, which is just, it's just a card game. If there's no heroes, there's no points, there's no nothing. It's just questions and you collect cards, three or more.
Okay.
If you're playing the hero version, again, I'm going to say three or more, but I'm also going to tap that out. At like five, three to five is the best. And when I say that, the three includes a dungeon master. So it would be the dungeon master and two players, which would be the minimum, right? That's the absolute minimum. And I wouldn't suggest that. You can do it and it's fine. You'll probably still have fun, but it's more fun if you have like three or four players. And that's where it really, that's where it'll shine, three or four, the actual players and a game master. But you could do it with two players and a game master.
And then do you have a suggested age range for players? Is this like a five and up, or is this like a teen plus?
Well, the questions are all over the place. There are Harry Potter questions. There are Twilight questions. There are AD&D first edition questions. There are classic sci-fi, which can date back to the 50s or 60s. So the age range is all over the place. So it's kind of hard to say. It is. It's really hard to say because if you're an older, so you're an older geek, you're 60 years old, right? And you remember all the old stuff, there's a good chance, unless you've been keeping up, you're going to get hurt on a lot of the questions that are newer. So like, you know, if you have like, I don't know, you know, some of these older gamers, say somebody like Tim Kask, right? What is he going to know about Harry Potter? Maybe he does. I don't know what his interests are, but like, I'm not sure that he's going to know a whole lot about Harry Potter or Twilight. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. At the same time, I don't think too many 18-year-old kids know about AD&D first edition. So that's the thing. It's all over the place. And some of these questions are like, some of the science questions are like high school science, like stuff that someone in 11th grade would be like, oh yeah, know exactly what that is, right? And you may have learned that in 11th grade, but if you're 30 years old, you know, you are 12 years away, 13 years away from remembering, like, oh crap, ions. Shit, I don't remember what an ion is. I mean, like, I know the word and I know it has to do with atoms, but is that, and I don't remember the definition of an ion, right? So that could get you there, you know? So the age range is all over the place. It's very hard to pick one. There is a version of the game that you can play where you go teams. And when you go teams, like one team against another, that's where you have a young person who's into the Harry Potter and Twilight and all that kind of, maybe high school physics and stuff, right? And then you have an old grognard, somebody like, say, Tim Kask, Frank Mintz, or somebody like that, right? And then somebody like kind of in the middle, you know, who knows a lot about literature, mythology, and stuff. That would be a prime team. So yeah, that's the age range.
Okay, so then why are you going Kickstarter? Why aren't you doing a more traditional route for publishing it? Why aren't you, I don't know, there's a million different ways you could do it, right?
Sure.
Why crowdfunding, and even more specifically, why Kickstarter as opposed to a different crowdfunded method?
Okay, that's easy. So I'm doing all the design work. I'm doing all the writing. I've researched all the questions. I've done all the game design. I am doing the dungeon rooms, so I'm making all those myself. But for the character classes, I have to hire an artist to do those, because while I'm a designer and I'm a good graphic designer, I'm not like a fine artist. So I'm not, you know, I can't draw like really awesome characters. I wish I could, but I don't have that skill set. So I have to pay somebody for that. And that doesn't come cheap. If you think about it, there's 10 heroes, you know, a hero sketch like that is about $60 to $80 a piece. And if there's 10 of them, that's $600 to $800 just for 10 images. It adds up. And then I got to do box cover design. That's going to be somewhere in the ballpark of $250, right? That's somewhere in there. So, you know, I'm looking at like a $1,200 worth of artwork right there. So I don't have $1,200 just sitting around. I could probably swing it if I really worked at it. So if I really wanted to like save up over the year and make it happen, I could do that. I could buy one piece of art every month and then, you know, but then we get into what's your economy as a scale. So if I want to get this printed up and I want to get it cost effective so that I could actually make a few dollars for all my hard work, right? Because I mean, you know, I know some people like, oh, I'm not really in it for the money, but dude, I mean, I've spent hundreds of hours on this, right? I wouldn't mind making a few dollars on it. There's nothing wrong with making a few bucks on it. To do that, I got to get it mass produced. I mean, I don't know if any of you guys ever bought any prototype stuff. Like I bought this. All right. So this is just a prototype deck. So this isn't even half the size of what this whole game is going to be. This is like a little over, I mean, it's about 120 cards, and the full set is going to be, 460 cards for the basic set, which would be just one of these boxes. And then the adventure deck is 210. So you can imagine these two put together is half the adventure deck, right? So it adds up.
Wow.
This is just a playtest deck. So I got to have like, you know, a ton of cards printed up. To do that, you know, on a prototype basis is going to cost me somewhere in the vicinity of $20. Now, if you were to buy a game, you know, and that's not even including the box. That's just the cards. If you were to buy this Cube of Death game, you're not going to want to pay $50 for it. I mean, that's just too much. But if I were to prototype it, if I were to do it at the prototype, like one at printing one at a time, that's how much I'd have to charge somebody for me to make anything off of it. And, but that's not, that doesn't work. You know, you don't want to pay that, and I'm still not going to make very much off of it. But if I go with the Kickstarter route, I can get 1,000 of these printed up, and the price drops to like 25% of that. So I can get this to you in your, you know, in your game collection in the, say, I haven't done prices yet, but it's looking like somewhere in the $25 range for a set. Right. And that's reasonable. That's a reasonable thing. I think that's a reasonable price. I've seen games purchased way more than that even. But you know, I'm kind of thinking about it, and I'm like, it's a card game. It's not something that people are going to play all the time, you know, and if you're going to put it in your collection, you're probably not going to want to pay $50-$60 for it. So I want to get it into a price range that people will be happy with buying it. But to do that, I got to get it mass printed. I have to get it mass printed. And to get it mass printed, I need a lot of capital up front. And that's where Kickstarter comes in. They come in, I can take that chunk of money, go get 1,000 of these things printed up, make everybody happy. They get what they want at a price point that they're happy with. I'll be left over with some, hopefully, that I can put in the TSR store because they're producing it for me. And then people who didn't get in on the Kickstarter can come along later and buy copies of it. And then, you know, that'll also give me some money to maybe do some expansions and continue on with it. So if people really liked it, so if people, enough people back it, that it gets kickstarted, if it's successful, that means that people probably like the idea. So I want to make sure that it's available to other people who might like the idea. So that's why Kickstarter and not Indiegogo. I have nothing against Indiegogo or any of these other, I think there's a few other out there. Kickstarter has a community. It has this whole community aspect to it. It has click through, and it has reach out. So being that TSR is producing this, they produced Top Secret. They had, I want to say it was like 2,000 backers, close to it. I will get access to those 2,000 backers by running through them, because then they will say, hey, TSR is putting out its next Kickstarter to you 2,000 people. Check this out. And then they can come and check it out. And, you know, and I'm going through TSR because it's a, you know, it's becoming a trusted name again. And they have full input on this. So Jason, who runs TSR, has seen these and he's giving me feedback and input. So if you like the quality of TSR products, you will like the quality of this because it's going through them. So if you trust them, you can trust me.
So this is going out through the TSR name, through the TSR yes. Kickstarter account, instead of like when you did Rogue Chess, that was under your Kickstarter account, for example. Mm-hmm. So that it had, you know, your name and whatever. So if someone's looking for you and they're like, oh, I want to back the Cube of Death, and they go on Kickstarter and try to find it and they look under your name, they might not as easily see it. They're going to have to make sure that they.
Yeah, I have to work that out, Jonathan. I'm not totally sure how that's going to work. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I mean, like if they look me up, will they find it? I don't know. I have to talk to Jason about that. Like, I don't know if in Kickstarter you can do co-creators, like you can put the creator's name. So if they look me up, they'll find me as myself and under TSR or not. I don't know. I don't know how any of that works. So we'll figure that. We're going to figure that one out.
And with the Kickstarter, I mean, there's a lot of things that go on with it. So, for example, what is your funding goal? How much are you hoping to raise for this?
Ooh, yeah. Okay. So numbers, we don't know numbers yet. We don't know yet. I had a quote put out. I had two quotes put out to companies, but then things have changed since then. I've added more cards and stuff. So, you know,
is there a ballpark estimate? Ballpark, not going to hold you to it and say, hey, it ends up being more.
Yeah, okay. So I hear you. I hear you. Yeah. I'm thinking we're probably looking at 5,000.
Okay. That seems reasonable to me, actually.
Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking 5,000 will be a good number to get this done, because if I have 1,000 decks printed up, that's $5 a deck for print costs. So it might be more. It might be 7,000. I don't know. It depends. Because whenever you do a game, you have to realize, and I don't know if a lot of people know this. I don't know if people know this. So let's talk about this real quick. When you buy a game in the store, right? Let's say you buy a game for $20, right? The way that works, if you buy it in a brick and mortar store, is that that game has to cost $5 or less to produce, right? That has to be what the people, you know, if I send it out to China or GameCraft, whoever I send it to, I have to be able to buy one unit for $5. And if I have to buy it in bulk to get it down to $5 per unit, that's what it needs to be for me to make anything off of it. Because at $5, I could then sell to, say, TSR for $10, or whoever the distributor is, say Atlas Games or whoever, right? So I sell it to them for $10, and then they sell it to the customer for $20. And the reason why these numbers jump is because for $5 for me, if it costs me $5 to make it, it shouldn't take any more labor or effort than $5 extra of my time per unit. Like, that's kind of like an industry number. And then when the distributor buys it for $10, they have to spend marketing. Yeah, you know, they have to do marketing. They have to pay their staff. They have to pay for shipping. They have to all this stuff. It shouldn't cost them more than $10 to do that, right? And for them to make a little profit. So that's kind of like that's really rough. That's really like I'm spackling it with a big fat spackle. You know, it's double than double. So yeah. So if I can get it to 25, if my goal would be to be able to sell it in stores for, say, 25. So that's 1250, and then that's 625. So if I can get them for 625 a deck, then I'm happy. You know, then we're good. So yeah, so I'm thinking, yeah, you're right. I think about maybe it's probably going to be somewhere around the $7,000 range, maybe eight. But then again, you know, I can't wait to get my quotes back. It might be a little more. Who knows?
But you're not looking. But it's $50,000 or $400.
It's not going to be $50,000. It's not even going to be $25,000. You know, it's going to be in the probably no more than $10,000 range.
That's good.
And that's for the basic, and. So let's talk about that. We're talking numbers, right? So what comes in a deck, right? So in a deck, you have 200 basic cards, you have 100 advanced cards, and you have 50 expert cards. That's a standard deck. And then you have 10 hero cards and 100 adventure cards. So that's what you would get for the base Kickstarter. If you were to back just the base product, that's what you would get. You'd get 200 basic, 100 advanced, 50 expert, 10 hero, and 100 adventure cards. Of those 100 adventure cards, there are 50 that are like a dungeon, like a regular dungeon. And then there's going to be 50 that's like a catacombs, like caverns and stuff. So that way you can run two different adventures if you wanted to, two different styles of adventures. So the base set basically has 460 cards. And that comes out to 550 questions. So you're going to have 550 trivia questions. So if you ever even just want to take the cards and like just you're having a party at your house, a geek party at your house, and you just want to see what people know, you could literally just grab this deck and you've got 550 geek trivia questions. You could play any kind of geek game, trivia game you wanted to with you know, you could say, if you get it wrong, you have to drink, whatever. That's fine too. So that's the basic, that's what the basic Kickstarter would be. And then there would be stretch goals, of course. And I've decided the stretch goals will be extra decks, extra adventure decks. So it comes with the mythic deck. That's what the base game comes with. But then there's going to be, you know, you can have a stretch goal that has a space deck and then another stretch goal that has a hero deck. So that would be 10 hero cards. So 10 space heroes. So you might have, you know, Cyborg or whatever. Then 10 hero decks. So you'd have, there'd be different types of heroes. So we have elemental or mutant or whatever. And of course they would come with adventures. So there'd be an adventure that was like a spaceship, or maybe, you know, like an enemy's, you know, enemy arch enemy base or whatever. And some of this stuff comes from the Cube of Death podcast that we did. I'm like repurposing a lot of the stuff that came from that. And then beyond that, beyond those two extra stretch goals, I don't know, but I will tell you what the ideas are. So maybe a steam / Western, like a Weird West deck, and then maybe like a pulp deck. It's like an Indiana Jonesy type deck, maybe, and maybe a cyber deck. But I don't know how many of them I'm going to do. That's a lot of work. If you think about it, I got to make 100 dungeon rooms with art per each one of those. So those stretch goals are going to be kind of lofty. You know, they're going to be kind of high because it's a lot of work. The questions, not so much. I have thousands of questions. I do not even need to research any more questions. I don't care how many stretch goals you would have. I have a document that has over 110 pages, 8.5 by 11, of questions and answers.
Oh my goodness.
So, So questions I have, the developing the adventure decks would be that would be the work. So those would probably be the stretch goals.
So you can have stretch goals. You're going to have different backer levels so people can choose kind of what they want and what they're aiming for. And when is this coming? Oh, when's the Kickstarter going to go live?
All right. So it was supposed to go live February 10th. But then I spoke with Jason at TSR Games and he was like, look, we need to do 30 days of promo, like hardcore promo before the Kickstarter starts. And I was like, okay. So then I was thinking, all right, so then February 10th to March 10th, we'll do promo. But I've been so busy with these two cons that I'm going to and everything that I haven't really been able to get all this together. So this is where I'm thinking we are. I'm thinking that the month of March will be the promo. And then April, maybe April 1st, I mean, that might be kind of a fun date to start, you know, like April Fools, but like really, like, no, we're not joking. But maybe the whole month of April. Will be the Kickstarter run. That's sort of where I'm standing right now. I'm not going to plunk that down as the official date, but if it's not the first day of April, it's going to be, I guarantee you it'll be in April because I'm not going to let it go any further than that. And I have some fun stuff planned. I have some really fun stuff planned. So during the Kickstarter, you know how like people bug you during Kickstarters, you know, like, hey, back my Kickstarter, right? And you get tired of seeing those. And I get it. I do too. Totally get it, right? Totally understand. Stop bugging me with your damn Kickstarter, right? I mean, I appreciate it, but you know, enough. This is something fun I'm going to do. Every day, there's going to be a tweet that's going to have a trivia question in it. And then you think you know the answer, so come up with the answer in your mind, click on it, and it'll take you to a web page that gives you the answer and some information and a link to more information if you want to find out. So you get a trivia. You get a trivia every day, right, for 30 days. So I get to remind you about the Kickstarter, but it's fun for you. It's something you might look forward to, you know, not just me bugging you. It's like I'm giving back. So I'm not just bugging you. I'm giving you something for your time. Like, see my tweet. But here's a little gem for you. Have some fun with this. And then for Facebook, I'll probably be doing some of the same stuff. Instagram, I'll be posting artwork. So I'm saving some of the, I'm getting artwork in. I'm going to save it for Instagram so that, you know, every couple of days I can put up a new Instagram image. Here's a new card. I might even do it every day because I got plenty of artwork I can use. I can use cards. I can use the adventure cards and I can use hero cards. I can use the box cover design. So every day I'm post one of those and then I'll probably cross post to Facebook and stuff. And then we will probably do a contest of some kind. Jason and I were talking about that. He said there is a way to count retweets and stuff like that. There's a software, like a online software tool that you can use so that when people do like retweets and stuff, it'll count them and give them points. And then we can do like, you know, most points or points above a certain number, maybe something like that, put you in a drawing, or maybe you get one entry into a drawing per like point that you get something. I don't know, something like that where they'll win something. Like maybe the box cover is a giant poster. Cause I'm having that done as with a talented, it's going to be a unique piece of art. That's going to be maybe like an oil painting that will be then captured as the box cover. And then, or maybe a watercolor. I don't know what medium he actually works in. I think he works in oil, but whatever he works in, I'm going to get the original from him and then we'll frame it. And whoever wins the contest can get that, you know, something like that. So that it'll be really fun. Clever. Yeah. I hate when people get bugged by Kickstarters, you know, because I understand I'm on both ends of the fence. I understand from a Kickstarter runner and a creator that, you know, you want to get it out there to people, but I also understand from the other side of not wanting to be bugged. So I kind of want to make it so that we're doing this together so that it's fun. It's fun for both of us. It's fun for you as the audience and seeing the Kickstarter develop. And of course I'm going to be doing a lot of Kickstarter live events. All right. Oh, that's one more thing. Yeah. I'm also going to be doing every weekend during the Kickstarter, I'm going to go to gaming stores and I'm going to run this baby live and I'm going to stream it, so that you can see how much fun people are having with this game that I'm asking you to back. I'm not asking you to just give me your money. I'm asking you to have fun with me and I'm asking you to buy into something that's a lot of fun because I want you to enjoy it. I mean, that's the bottom line. I want people to really enjoy this game. And I'll tell you, Jonathan, I hadn't even considered doing this until I was at GaryCon and I had a bunch of people at a table. I had just decided to run this in the blitz style, which we can talk about. I know we're running out of time, but I'll talk about it real quick. There's a blitz style version of this game, and that's where the points come in. So to just real quick, let me pull this out. So you got the 1 point, you got the 4 point card. So experts are 4 point, basic is 1 point, advanced is 2 point. The way that works is that each person would get 4 basic questions. So 5 of us are sitting at a table. We each get 4 basic questions. We each get 2 advanced questions, and we each get 1 expert question. And then what you do is you go around the table, you know, clockwise or however you want to do it. And when it comes to your turn, you can ask anyone at the table any question in your hand. So you give them whatever card. So if it's a basic card, you would say, "Hey, Jonathan," let's say I would say, "Hey, Jonathan, I'm going to ask you this basic question." So you can pick between these two categories. Or I might say, "Nope, Jonathan is an expert question," you know, and we have to do it. And if you get the question right, I give you the card and you put it into your point pile. If you get it wrong, I put it into my point pile. And when we're all out of cards, we count up our points. The person with the highest points wins. So that's a real simple game. So anyway, I'd figured out how to do that with the original game. It wasn't designed for that, but I figured out, oh, I could do that with this. We were playing at Gary Con. There was a big, big round table in the bar, and there were like 4 of us playing. And people were watching us play and seeing how much fun we were having, and more people came over. That table got up to like 8 people. I had to keep dealing people in. And they were having so much fun, and everybody was asking me, where can I get this game? Where can I buy this? Right. Cause you know me, everything I make is real quality, even if it's just for my own purpose. Right. And I was like, it's not for sale. It's not in a store. This is just something I made. And they're just like, you need to be selling this. This is so much fun. And that was when I made a decision that I was going to do a professional run with this, that they made me do it.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. It was a good time.
So you're going to be actually running this coming up soon. You mentioned earlier in the show that you can be at TotalCon, which is February 22nd to the 25th, 2018, at the Best Question in Marlborough, Massachusetts. So you're running this a few times, right, at the convention?
No, I'm only running it once, officially. I am going to go to the bar, and I might even hang out in the TSR room with an empty table, because apparently we got some empty tables. But I'm going to be at the if you find me, if you see me, ask me to play. I'll play with you. But if you're going to be at TotalCon, but I'll probably go around to the bar where they have tables and stuff, and hanging out at the bar, and I'll have the deck with me. And anyone who wants to play, I'll play with you. So I'll run one official event, and then just whatever else we can squeeze in.
That's pretty cool.
But that's how easy it is to play, man. It's super easy, a lot of fun. So I just like I said, I've been working on it for years, and it's finally, this is it. It's time. Time to live.
It really does seem like the kind of game that's geared towards an audience of people who are like me, who, you know, are interested in this sort of thing, but maybe aren't quite as familiar or knowledgeable, but want to try like almost a party game aspect of doing a role-playing game and all this other kind of stuff. And it just really broad base of people, I think, who would be interested in it. And you're right, the stuff you do, it is quality. I'm not just saying it because you're on the show, but like that prototype you had sent me, I looked at it, I was like, this is really good. And I remember showing it to people here, and I was like, hey, look at this. And they thought it was a finished product, and I was like, no, it's not.
No, but it's just a prototype. Yeah,
it looks that good. We actually I had reached out on social media to see if people had any questions for you. And I did have a question from someone who couldn't be here because he wussed out on the recording, just like he's wussing out on going to TotalCon. So
I think I know who this is. All right, go ahead.
People will be familiar with my friend and co-host. There's many co-hosts, but my friend and co-host, Adrian. And Adrian, busy doing all sorts of things that aren't here, which clearly aren't. Not as important, but he has a question for you, and he says that I need to make sure that I tell you it is from him. So he wants to know, quote, why are you so awesome, unquote.
Why am I so awesome?
Literally his question. You would think that I'm making it up, because it is really like, let's just self-congratulate yourself, but it's literally his question.
I have no idea. I don't. Wow. Well, yeah, I'm humbled. Yeah, I'm kind of a humble person. I don't really see myself as awesome. I just see myself as a person who has passion. I'm a passionate person. Maybe that's, I don't know. Maybe that's what drives some, makes some people seem awesome, you know, because they have a drive to do something. You know, wow. Adrian, you got me, man. I'm a little speechless. Jonathan, I'm speechless. Speechless, right? Yeah. No, it's you know, I like to make people happy. You know, I get happiness. I feed off of it. It is selfish in a way. Like, it's not just giving. Like, when other people are happy and I've made them happy, it makes me happy. So, you know, I have this theory that we don't do anything that is truly altruistic. We always get something out of it. You know what I mean? Like, even like people who do like great acts of kindness all the time, I love them and thank goodness for them, right? But at the same time, we have to admit that they do get a satisfaction out of doing that. So they are getting something out of it, right? So it's not 100% altruism, but keep doing those altruism acts, please. People, we need all of you that we can get. I don't care that you get something out of it, keep doing it. But I love to help. I love to help people out with things. I love to make people happy. I mean, I do the Mythwits, man. I don't make a penny off that. And I do it to entertain people. I love to entertain people. I don't know. I think it comes from the fact that I was somewhat of an only kid. I mean, I have an older brother, but he's so much older, right? That I'm still kind of an only kid. And I grew up and I was kind of a ham, you know, and,
the shock.
It feeds my ego. I guess it just feeds my ego. You know, I don't know. But you know, I love doing this stuff. And fortunately, I do seem to have a talent for it. At least as far as other people seem to say. And I'm just glad to do it. I'm glad to be able to make cool stuff and make people happy.
Cool. Speaking of Mythwits, which you had mentioned, and also TotalCon, we're gonna be doing a crossover episode at TotalCon. Yes. I have no idea what we're going to talk about, but I'm really excited about it.
You know, I think we're going to, let's just talk about the experiences we've had, because we'll be, that's Saturday night, right?
Yep.
So we'll be pretty deep into the con by that point, because we'll have Thursday and Friday behind us, and then Saturday morning and afternoon. We can just talk about, let's talk about TotalCon. Let's talk about the time that we've had so far. And maybe future plans. And then it'll be, you know, it'll be like me and you and Mike, and we'll have Steve come in. He'll have done his screening for A Word from a Gamer. You know, we can have a couple of people just come in and sit around and we'll talk and have a good time. And just, I think people will enjoy that episode because they'll get the energy. Cause you know, we get all amped up when we're at the con, right? We just, that flows through us. And when you do a podcast, you know that energy comes out, right? You know, it's like, that's why live episodes are so great, because the audience gets that energy of what you're doing. So I think that's what we'll do. We'll just have a good time with it. We'll go with it. There's no need to overplan for that one, I don't think.
A neat thing about this is that we're opening it up. So it's not just going to be like us in a room closed off by ourselves. We're letting people come in and watch, be like a live studio audience, although we're not in a studio or anything, but they'll be able to come. So if people are interested, we'll have information on social media. Probably we'll decide that actually when we're at the con, because we'll have to know where it's going to be and all that kind of stuff. But we'll put it out on there.
Yeah, and we'll take questions and stuff. I mean, if you guys, you know, if somebody comes to the to that room and, you know, comes and sits with us, and we'll have the room all, it's a room off the con all to ourselves. So it's our own little recording area, and there's no other games or anything going on in there. So if you want to come in and sit and watch, that's great. If you have questions, come over and ask them, you know, ask. I'll have a mic out in the center. Maybe I'll use, I think like you got your Yeti. I'll bring my Yeti Pro. Right. And we'll just set it on Omni so that we can just sit around and it'll capture all of us. If you want to do that, I think that would be the way to do it. It's pretty good at that. And then if somebody wants to ask a question, they can come up and they can ask a question. Everybody can hear it. We can talk about it. Heck, if only one or two people show up, sit down, join us. You know? But yeah, I think it'll be good. And we're going to live stream it if we can. So if you're listening, I don't know when this goes out, Jonathan, or what's live right now for everybody, but if you're at TotalCon or if you're not at TotalCon, if you're at home, it'll be what, Saturday night at 5, right? Five-ish. We're going to a little setup time, because at 5 is when the other events start pouring out. So we have to kick all them out. We got to set up our equipment. So let's look at 5:30-ish. We'll try and stream it live. If we can stream it live, then you can watch us from TotalCon live, like on Facebook. And we'll stream it through Mythwits Facebook. And then, of course, you'll get a copy of it, and then you can put it on your channel as well. Because your channel should be live by then, right? Your YouTube channel, your regular one.
Well, yeah. Let's not talk about YouTube, because that's for the very special Wargaming Recon After Dark episode.
Right. Yeah, yeah, I got you. Yeah, yeah.
No, that's actually, I've talked about that not on the show, but I've talked about that with our Patreon backers. And I should thank them, actually. I want to thank everyone who supports the show on Patreon, who's a Wargaming Recon Army member. And I, in particular, want to call out and call attention to backer Patrick for his kind and generous support. It's really cool because we've been talking about crowdfunding and crowdsourcing stuff throughout this whole episode, right? And the different reasons for doing it in each platform is different, right? It has its own strengths, its own weaknesses.
Right, yeah.
And for like a one-time thing, Kickstarter is amazing, right? You wouldn't want to look at something that was continuous for putting out Cupid Death because it doesn't make sense, right?
Right.
But something like a podcast where you can have new content coming out on a recurring basis, you don't want to do a one-time thing and be like, we need $50,000 to keep the show going for a year. Like, that doesn't work. So
unless you're, what is it? Dice Tower.
Dice Tower.
Right. Because they're a giant, right?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, they did it, right? They were like, we're going to do this. And if we get enough money, then that'll allow Tom, who's the head honcho over there at Dice Tower, to quit his job and be head honcho for full time for 2 full years. They're going to go ad free and all that kind of stuff. And some podcasts have done it. But generally, you're not going to do that because they had to put a lot of physical product in with that backer rewards. It gets expensive to do that. And so we use Patreon, which is a really nice method to support creative type people, whether you're authors or you're artists or you're podcasters and so forth. And it allows funding to come in on a recurring basis, very much a PBS model, which is kind of nice. So the people who use and like and enjoy what's being done support it if they so choose, and that allows us to keep on going and buy equipment, things like the Yeti microphone that we're using, and to go to cons and all that kind of stuff. So it's pretty neat to have that. But one of the really cool things about it is also a cool thing that Kickstarter has. There's a really good community there, so you get a lot of interaction with people who support you, and you can reach out and find others who are in similar communities and like other projects and things that are being done and creators that are going on who might be of interest. So you get a lot of back and forth with them, and we like to create some content just for them. Sometimes it's video, sometimes it's audio, but I've talked a little bit about the YouTube troubles over there. YouTube is problematic.
I'm not happy with the YouTube either. I mean, they haven't really done anything to me, but
oh, you wait. At the same time,
I've seen what they've done to other people, and I'm waiting for my turn. You're right. I'm waiting for my turn. I've gotten dinged a few times on things, and I'm just like, really? Facebook Live has been really good to me. It has been a very good tool for us, for the Mythwits. And I love the community we've been building. If you guys are listening to this, I mean, you're already our target audience. I mean, because you're a gamer, you're a geek, and you're a gamer. We don't just do gaming; we do all kinds of geekery stuff. Like we have actors on that have starred in you know, geeky movies and stuff.
You had an astronaut on; that was pretty cool.
We've had an astronaut. Yeah, we did like a real honest to God astronaut, a guy that flew on the Discovery space shuttle, and we talked about him being an astronaut and doing stuff. We had the guy that brought him on was Jack Clemens, who is he's an engineer that was working for NASA, and he worked all through the Apollo program, so the Men on the Moon program, and into the space shuttle program. He's the one that brought that guy, helped us make connection with that guy, because he was personal friends with that astronaut, and he talked all about how like the Apollo, you know, missions and stuff. So there's that. There's science. We do science shows.
You've had filmmakers, right? Game designers.
Filmmakers on. We've had game writers. So we did again, like we've mentioned before, Tim Kask, our buddy Tim Kask. We've had Frank Mincer. We've had Mike Pondsmith, John Wick, who did 7C. So a lot of game designers have come on. As a matter of fact, he came on and launched his. Basically talked about his Kickstarter on our show, put the Mythwits video on his Kickstarter page, and it got thousands of hits because people were like, they wanted to find out about 7C. So they just watched our Mythwits episode, which we talked all about the Kickstarter. It was good. It was nice. It worked out for both of us. That was a nice trade. So there's tons of that. Authors, we've had science fiction authors. This guy Paul Cooley comes on a lot. He's one of our buddies. His books are fantastic. So just, you know, check us out. It's a good time. And again, you can get in the chat room. You can ask our guests questions. So if you're like, Like we had Bob Campbell, the guy who created Ren and Stimpy. We had the guy who created Ren and Stimpy on our show. If you had ever had a question about Ren and Stimpy, you could have asked him personally from our chat room. You could have said, "Hey, ask Bob this question," and we would have asked him. So, any you know, if you watch and you see our guests and you like one of our guests, you can ask us a question. We had one of the guys who created the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, one of the original four guys that created that. He was on our show. Steve Levine, he's sort of one of the lesser known, but hey, we take what we can get, right? You could ask him anything about the original Turtles and he would have answered it. And it's a really good show. We have a lot of fun with it. So, you know, just make sure you check out mythwits.com and see what we got coming up every week, Monday nights, 9 p.m. We go Facebook Live and we invite you to watch us.
And I got to say, from personal experience, because clearly you haven't had anyone better who was able to do the show, but I've been on a couple times and Adrian's been on once. Yeah. It's a lot of fun to do the show. And I'm someone who likes to watch it too. I listen to the audio podcast version of it, but the strength is watching it live. And so it's nice that you guys have been able to do that and really flesh that out and allow people to have that interaction there. So I think it's what makes it worthwhile.
And it's not just a hangout. We use Google Hangouts as a backbone, but we stream it through OBS, which then we add graphics and we add sound effects and we do, you know, and we play a game every episode. Now we play a game with our guests. So the games are just as much fun as anything, you know, and they're all kinds of games that we play with them. And it's like 15 minutes, the last 15 minutes of the show, we play a game and we have a lot of fun with that. So it's you get a lot out of the show. I think there's a lot to it.
So if people want to keep up to date with all the things you're doing and of course, with Cube of Death and keep up, on what's going on with all that, what are the best ways for them to stay in touch?
Okay. So the one thing that the one place you can really find us is mythwits.com. That's where I do. That's everything Mythwits, you know, you can find everything Mythwits there. It's a nice, central point. Even the YouTube stuff that we do, I have embedded links from YouTube for our page, and our podcast. So it's also a podcast. We pull the audio, just like your show, we pull the audio out and make it a podcast for people who don't have time to watch video. There's a link in there. You know, there's a whole setup in there. You can listen to all the podcasts from our webpage or whatever. But also, you know, there's also studio187.com, which is sort of my business, my personal business, which everything runs out of that I do. So you can go to studio187.com or you can go to, you know, TSR Games is what Cube of Death is coming out of. So it's tsrgames.com. Let me make sure that's right. I'm not sure because I don't want to give the wrong address. You know what I mean?
I think you're right. I think it is tsrgames.com.
Yeah, tsrgames.com. You can find that's where Cube of Death will be officially. There's also other games they have there. They have The Hunt, which you can buy, but it's sold out right this minute, but we're going to get more of The Hunt in, which is a cool game. We're running that at TotalCon. They have the Pantheon series, which is a bunch of adventures. You can buy Top Secret New World Order from there. James Carpio is going to be having, you know, he's going to be doing Pulp Era soon, which is his next game. That's going to be another role-playing game. And then, you know, there's more and more games TSR has in the pipeline. So tsrgames.com, mythwits.com, stu27.com. And of course, Facebook, you know, stu27 Facebook, Mythwits Facebook, Peter Bryant Facebook, you know, all that stuff and things everywhere.
There's a lot of things.
Yeah, it's unfortunately you have to be everywhere these days.
You're right. You got to be where the people are. But listeners don't have to worry about remembering all that because we get show notes. WarGamingRecon.com/WR202. That's WarGamingRecon.com/WR202. We'll bring you to the show notes and we'll have links to all the things so people can keep up to date with you, Peter, and see what's going on with Cube of Death and look forward to it for April 2018. I'm pretty excited.
I'm excited. I'm really excited. So I hope I haven't talked all your fans' ears off. I know we went a little bit over what you normally do for an hour, but you know, I'm a talker. I apologize.
So one of the nice things about having a podcaster on as a guest is that, you know, you're not going to have dead air. You know, you can have good quality audio. Right. And I love when I have anyone where I used to say that I like to have guests where I could just wind them up, like the Energizer Bunny, and let them go. Because then this is going to make me sound lazy, but then like, I don't have to do as much. And the show's really good. There's great content because people get to hear me all the time, right? But they only get to hear the guests whenever. And then I had to stop saying that because I used to say it about one guest in particular who's British. And over there, it is rude to say that you're winding someone up. It's kind of like you're needling them and just like pestering them and trying to get them going and getting them all riled up in an unhappy way. So I learned that I can't just say that I like to wind people up. But in my mind, I think of the Energizer Bunny, that like you wind him up and he keeps going and going and going with great content. But I love when I have a guest like that where, you know, they're just ready and they want to talk. And some guests are great, but like you really have to kind of help them a little bit more than others. They might be a little shy, whatever. Like you don't have any of that. And that's wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. British, there are subtle differences, but man, they are there. You know, we had Professor Elemental on our show, and he we were talking to him about British rappers versus American rappers. And he said, British rappers are it's very difficult in the British community because while British people are okay with Americans bragging about themselves, because that's what we are, we're cowboys, right? You know, in the world's eyes, it's fine for us to brag about ourselves. It's part of our charm. But a British person can't brag about themselves because it's gauche. It doesn't play as well. And it's very hard for a British person to be a rapper because, you know, a lot of rap songs, I guess, you have to, there is that element of bragging about yourself, right? So it just does, he's like, it's really weird. It's like, we're okay with you doing it, but we're not okay with us doing it. He's like, it's very hard to be a British rapper. I was like, that's funny. So yeah.
That is way too funny.
Yeah, yeah. That's the kind of stuff you would find out watching MythWits, you see. Stuff you may not find out other places.
It's a global community out there.
Yes.
It makes for interesting listening.
All right, Jonathan, thanks for having me on. Thank you.
I really appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to come. I know you're going full throttle, especially with all these conventions coming up and all that. Yes. So I appreciate that you're able to come here on this episode. And I want to remind listeners, of course, to check out those show notes because there's going to be a lot of stuff. And we'll update things as things coming up. And also check out our social media. We have all the things, you know, the Facebook and the Twitter. Jamie does our Twitter, which is great. I'm so grateful to have a social media coordinator who handles Twitter because I don't understand Twitter. I used to say 140 characters is enough, and now we're 280 or whatever they bumped us up to.
Yeah.
It's still not enough for me meaningful engagement with anyone. And yet a lot of people are able to. And I can't do it. I don't know why. But so we get a guy who does it, and he's wonderful, and he's from Norway or lives in Norway, and just a great team here at Wargaming Recon. So I'm really appreciative of that. But people, check out the show notes, check out Cube of Death, see what's going on. And everyone, you know the deal. No matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how much time you're thinking of ways to solve trivia questions for playing Cube of Death, you know that you have to, you need to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other good shows on the network. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit wargamingrecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 18th through the 20th, 2018, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.